Hello, and welcome back to the Post-Production Club. My name is Luke Fritz.
And I'm Gavin Buckland. Today we talk with motion designer Jake Matthew. He's a good friend of ours that we met a few years ago at a motion design meetup in downtown Chicago. He's worked on animating the title sequences for a lot of Marvel content, like the special presentation intro, the intro sequence for Miss Marvel, and the main-on-end sequence for the Marvels. We talk about the process of getting those jobs, working on content for Marvel, the technical aspect of working on a big project like that, and then even get to hear about how freelancing has kind of changed for his career as he's been doing it for quite some time. So I'm excited for you guys to hear this one from him. He's a good friend, and I think he has a lot of great insight to offer into the post-production process as it comes to designing and creative direction and animation. So let's dive in. Mr. Jake Matthew, thank you for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
Where does this podcast find you?
I'm in Chicago, Illinois. I'm actually in the suburbs, Oak Park, Illinois.
Did you grow up here?
I'm actually from Cleveland, so still in the Midwest. And kind of after college, kind of lived in the West Coast in San Francisco. But since 2008, I've been in Chicago and suburbs.
Nice. What was Cleveland like?
It's kind of like a smaller, less exciting version of Chicago.
Yeah.
But it's right on like Lake Erie, so that was fun in the summers. You can go on boats and stuff. And my friends lived on the lake. It was nice. And like when we were older, there's like a area in Cleveland called the Flats, which is like right on the lake, and it's a bunch of bars and clubs and cool restaurants. So we'd like take our boat to the thing and get a drink and then get back on our boat. It's pretty cool.
Nice. You saying Cleveland is like a smaller, less exciting version of Chicago, I think describes 99% of the rest of the country, especially in the Midwest.
Yep.
Right? Nice. Well, thanks a ton for coming on today. You're a super talented motion designer who have animated a lot of really cool title sequences, especially for Marvel. And so would love to kind of just really dive in and hear about what it was like to work on Marvel content. How'd you feel when you first found out when you're going to get to work on that stuff?
It was pretty amazing. Growing up, if you guys know me, I'm a huge Marvel Comics fan. Grew up reading the comics, watching the cartoons, go to every Marvel movie opening weekend. And so it was probably like a bucket list item in my career to like work on something related to Marvel. And like when I was in college and starting to get into motion graphics, like the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies are coming out, and Imaginary Forces was the company that did the title sequences for that. I'm like, oh, those are so cool. Maybe one day I can work on like a title sequence. That was like 20 years ago. I'm like, maybe it won't happen. And like right out of college, I was thinking about moving to LA where all those cool studios were. And now that once I decided to move to Chicago, I thought that kind of window had shut. But luckily, or as like a side result of the whole COVID era, like once I was working completely remotely, a lot of studios from other cities started reaching out. Because before that, I was pretty much completely Chicago-based, working on-site at different studios and agencies downtown Chicago. But now I was getting contacts in L.A. and San Francisco and New York. And so out of the blue, maybe 3 years ago, Perception Studios, they're in New York. They just emailed out of the blue, and they said they found me. I'm not sure how they found my portfolio. Maybe it was LinkedIn or Google. And they said they really liked my work, and they have a project that they think I would be good for. And as soon as I saw the Perception in my inbox, I'm like, I know they work on Marvel stuff. Please let it be a Marvel project. And like the very next email, once we figured out the schedule, they sent me an NDA, and the NDA had the word Marvel on it. And I'm like, yes. And then it said the project I was working on was called New Jersey. I'm like, there's no Marvel movies called New Jersey. And then I like immediately typed Marvel New Jersey in Google, and I went to the IMD page of the Miss Marvel Disney Plus show, and that production code name was called New Jersey, or it was just Jersey, I guess. And so, yeah, that was the first of a few Marvel projects I got to work on with them. The biggest surprise with Miss Marvel, or starting with Miss Marvel, was I just assumed these big Marvel projects, title sequences, would have like this huge team, and I'd be like a small cog in like a big factory of designers and animators. But then as soon as I started the project, I realized there was a very, very small team. It was mainly an art director and me and like a designer and like designer / animator. So it was only like three of us doing the full title sequence. And there was, before I started, they hired maybe two illustrators to do a lot of the actual Photoshop frames that we were going to be animating. But then once production started, I realized I was going to be doing a big chunk of that title sequence. And so I thought, wow, these guys' perception doesn't know me, and they've never worked with me before, and they're giving me this giant responsibility. Like, they don't know if I'm like a asshole or like not dependable. And so it was like a big responsibility, but I liked that I got that opportunity. And then they liked it, and maybe within that same year, or maybe a few months later, they came back to me and they said that they needed a logo animation that Marvel requested called Special Presentation. And they had a designer create the logo, and they said it's going to be like a logo animation that happens on Disney Plus when Marvel releases a straight-to-Disney Plus movie. And they were talking about like a CBS old 70s, 80s vibe. And all I saw in the style frames was like the end logo. And then they were talking about like lasers, and there was a couple of shots of lasers flying. And they're like, just figure out how to get to that logo animation, which was like, I don't know if I can do this. It was like lasers flying in 3D space and like cameras flying through a tunnel of lasers. And I like looked at a lot of reference of like those early CBS, ABC, like ABC Night at the Movies that would come on in the 80s, and like HBO's early, like super early computer generated optical kind of looking logo animations. And then my first thought was to make it in Cinema 4D, because they were talking about they wanted like lasers flying, and you want like a camera flying through this tunnel of lasers in one continuous shot, and then kind of the camera pulls back to reveal the logo. And I didn't know how to do such a nice camera movement in After Effects, but they said they wanted me to only work in After Effects because they said depending on the movie it was attached to, they wanted to like change up the colors of the lasers to match, because there's gonna be a Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas special, so maybe Christmas colors for those, and there's gonna be a Halloween special, Werewolf at Night, so they maybe Halloween colors. So I had to figure out an After Effects only solution. And my first thought was trying to do like some kind of After Effects particles with like trap code particular, kind of like particles that like left a trail so they looked like lasers. But I didn't have that kind of control of like art designing each frame and having this laser exactly here and here. And so I was like running out of time because I needed to like show a work in progress. And like, I think the best way is just the good old-fashioned manual. So they're all like shape layers, just like animating the stroke of that shape layer. And then I kind of had a pre-comp of like 100 of them going in one direction. And I'd duplicate that pre-comp and rotate them. And eventually I'd get like a full like tunnel that I could kind of fly the camera through. And then the camera had to like do like a 180 degree turn. And I had to like figure out a way to go to a different composition. And so it was kind of like a quick cross dissolve as these new lasers come. And it was all manual, like thousands of lasers all together. But it worked good. And I purchased the plug-in Deep Glow. It was like the final touch to give each laser that nice kind of glow, that optical glow. And they liked it. And there wasn't many notes, actually. It was adding some, changing some of the colors, a little less lasers here, more lasers here. But yeah, that was a pretty cool experience. And that was just me. There's no team. So it was just me for like, I think I had like 3 or 4 weeks to work on that. And it was like a 7-second animation for Marvel Studios. Yeah. And then maybe, I think this was in 2021, 2022. And then like maybe a year later, they came back. And they're like, we have another Marvel project. And they're like, this is a big one. This is a movie, The Marvels, the sequel to Captain Marvel. And by the time they hired me, they already had hired 2 illustrators that kind of created all the frames, and they just needed someone to animate it. And again, since it was a movie title sequence, I'm like, okay, this one's gonna probably be a bigger scope. Again, it was only 3 of us. So it was me, the art director, who also animated some of the scenes, and then another animator, and it was like a 3-minute sequence. So each of us got 1 minute to animate, and it had to be like a fully continuous camera movement for the full 3 minutes. So we had to figure out how to marry our scenes together. And then another problem was the Photoshop files were like super high res because we were like zooming into them. They wanted to keep it clear and it's going to be on a big screen. So that made RAM previewing and trying to like scrub through my timeline really hard. And then also we were working at 32-bit After Effects projects. So they were super slow renders. Like I remember trying to render out like a 10-second chunk and it took like several hours. And like so many, it was all 2.5D After Effects, but it was still like chugging along with all these layers in 3D space and high res, 32-bit. And then anytime you add any like lighting effect or glow, that makes the render time even longer. And yeah, that was a tougher one, but it was still super cool. I loved the look of all the Photoshop files that I received, and there wasn't too many notes. Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was kind of had like a retro 70s like album cover kind of look to it. And, you know, since it was all After Effects, that's, like, my specialty. So, like, technically there wasn't anything I didn't know how to animate. It was just, like, the actual render times and the size of the files. Totally.
You said that you had 3 or 4 weeks just for the 7-second special presentation. How much time did you work on, like, how long did you work on the Ms. Marvel show and the Marvels movie?
For Ms. Marvel, I think it wasn't that long. It was maybe around a month, give or take, a week or so. And in addition to the title sequence, there were a few graphics throughout the show where they needed some graphics. Like there was like in episode 3, there was a flashback scene to like the 1940s or something. And they wanted like an old-timey headline animation and all like the film grain and stuff. So I created that. And whenever a new episode started, there was like a previously on Ms. Marvel, like I had to create those, and like coming up next on Ms. Marvel, like those kind of bumpers. And there was a map animation, cause in the show she goes to Pakistan. So they needed like a little map animation of India and Pakistan or what it looked like. She like time travels, spoiler alert. No. and yeah, so it was about a month ish to do the title sequence plus these handful of in episode graphics. And then for the Marvels, it's maybe a month and a half, I think. Originally it was like they gave us like 3 weeks, and I'm like, we're not gonna be able to do this in 3 weeks. And then like as the 3 weeks are ending, like we can extend it a week, and then they extended another week, and then I think it was about a month and a half, give or take.
Did that movie have any delays from COVID or anything like that? Like, had you worked on it and then it just like sat for a while? I can't recall the timeline.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to come out in the summer and then it got delayed to like November. So I think we finished it and then I couldn't talk about it for like several months. And I just had to wait.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, that one was kept getting pushed because of COVID. I think it was like pushed back several times. And so I think maybe they were able to extend the timeline because there wasn't a big rush because things were getting pushed back. And I think Marvel wasn't giving a lot of feedback on the title sequence because they were busy doing reshoots on this, on the actual film. There's a lot of reshoots. And plus, they were also working on like other, the latest Thor movie and Wakanda Forever were also happening around the same time. So they were, I think we were like small on the urgency list of things on Marvel's plate.
Yeah. Talk about the process of working on the show versus the movie. Were there any main differences between how you and the team worked?
Not really. It was pretty much the same kind of small team. We had the concept and the creative and kind of split up the project or the sequence. And I think the main difference was just like the movie was like a, just a bigger frame. I think we were rendering in 4K. And then also there's a weird thing that Marvel does on all, when we deliver anything from Marvel, they have a special adjustment layer over everything for their color space. And that like screws up all the colors. I had a problem with this on every Marvel thing I've worked on. So you put this Marvel preset on top of everything and it changes reds to pink and it turns blacks to gray. And so once you have that thing, then you have to make another kind of adjustment layer and you kind of have to tweak your hue and saturation and levels just to get something that didn't look all washed out and all weird and funky. Cause like for like that special presentation, it said like Marvel Studios and it's like a pink Marvel Studios now. And I'm like, I got to get the exact tweaking to get that official red Marvel logo in there. So that was a tricky thing. And that also made the render times slow for some reason. I don't know what that color layer did, but it was very processor intensive.
Yeah. Black magic probably.
Yeah. Something like that.
What do you feel like was the biggest thing that you learned from having worked on those projects?
I feel like technically it's not that much different than working on any other type of project, an explainer video or a commercial that's fully animated. I say the biggest challenge was like they had small teams and they had small deadlines. So like if your time management was not up to speed, you're going to be missing deadlines and you wouldn't be able to make it. So like, luckily I've been doing this for almost 20 years. And so working in all these fast paced, I worked on TV shows and commercials and having a good time management. I'm like, okay, this is, I only have a week to create this shot or I have a couple days to work on this shot. You got to figure out like what you can physically do in that time. Like, I'm like, oh, I can make something really cool, but it's going to take twice as long, but I'm going to miss my deadline. So I'm going to have to think, what can I do in 24 hours or what can I do in 8 hours? So like time management was a big thing. And for these small, quick turnaround kind of projects.
Yeah, for sure. Was there like, do you feel like you would change anything major in those projects if you had more time?
I would say for the Marvels, I just kind of ran out of time. We just whenever you made a change, you'd have to re-render the whole sequence. And like that 3-minute sequence was almost like a day to re-render everything. So like if you finish something that night, then you have to like wait till the next day to like get the render. So like we didn't have a lot of time to like keep tweaking, and I felt like if I had another maybe week or two, I felt like all my shots I could have tweaked a little bit, played with my camera movements to make it a little better, and some because it's all like in outer space, I wanted to have more like nebula stuff flying past the camera or like art directing more of the stars in the background. Because another technical challenge with that project was we had to do it all in After Effects because they needed it to be a stereoscopic 3D render. So we were animating the left eye. And then once Marvel approved the whole concept or whole video, then we would create a second camera for the right eye and move it, you know, a couple inches to the right, and then render the whole thing as a right eye, and then they'll combine it together to create the 3D for the 3D glasses. So, like,
that's wild. Yeah. Have you ever done 3D stuff before, or was that the first thing?
That was the first, like, After Effects 3D thing. I've played around with, like, VR 3D and Cinema 4D just to, like, render out some of my Cinema 4D stuff and, like, view it in a VR headset. Similar process. It's got two digital cameras, like, 6 inches apart.
That's cool. I've never done that before. I'll have to try it.
It's pretty cool. It's slow renders, but they look pretty cool in a VR headset.
Yeah, I would. That's so cool. It's so crazy.
Oh, yeah. And so since we knew this was going to be delivered as 3D, we had to, like, RAM preview our stuff with cheap, like, red and blue 3D glasses like you buy at, I ordered some on Amazon for, like, $5. And so we would, like, there's, like, a After Effects plugin called, like, 3D glasses or something. It was, like, came out, like, 20 years ago. But it will create, like, a blue and red version of your output. So we would, like, wear it as we're working sometimes and say, oh, wait, the thing's too close to camera. There's causing eye strain. So let's push it back. Or maybe we can exaggerate the depth and push those elements farther into the Z space. And so we were just doing, like, these really low key, like, ghetto version of 3D.
Dude, I love the image of someone just, like, walking in on you animating with, like, cheap 3D glasses. And, like,
there was actually, we were all doing, like, a end of day Zoom call watching it, and we're all in 3D, and someone, like, took a picture of the monitor of all of us with 3D glasses on. It's a pretty funny behind the scenes shot of us.
That is epic.
But, and I've never actually seen the final title sequence in, like, a real 3D environment. Maybe once I get, like, an Apple Vision Pro, I can view it on the Disney Plus app.
What was it like to go to the theaters and see your work on the screen? That was that pretty cool?
That Marvel's movie was the first time I saw my name in a big screen theater. And, like, I took my kids and we stayed through the credits, and I knew roughly when the VFX studio started coming up. I'm like, get ready. And I slowly took out my phone, started recording. And if you blink, you'll miss it. But I saw my name and my kids saw my name, and it was a really cool feeling. And yeah, it's definitely a bucket list moment for me in my career, just to work on a title sequence for a movie. But definitely, like, Marvel was always my dream client.
For sure. I remember I knew you at the time when it came out. And so when it happened, the credits, I pointed your name out to my wife, and I was like, I know that guy. So cool.
Yep. And then outside of the Marvel projects, through Perception, they also let me work on a sequence for the sequel to A Christmas Story with Ralphie. So it's like a sequel that takes place 20 years in the future. Now it's the same actor. He's an adult, and he still does those daydreams from that original 80s movie, or 70s, late early 80s. And so they wanted me to create a dream sequence, like a daydream sequence. And they shot footage of a bunch of, like, scenes of people celebrating Christmas. And they're like, we need this to look like a Norman Rockwell painting, but in motion. And I had no idea how to, like, take video and, like, make it look like moving oil painting or, like, acrylic. And so, like, I did, like, a lot of research, and then ended up using a program called EB Synth. Have you heard of that? So EB Synth, kind of like, you can take a frame of your video, and then you can take a doctored frame of, like, I take that frame, paint it in Photoshop, and then say, take the entire video and make it look like this frame. And so, like, I took a few key frames from the video, painted it in Photoshop, added a bunch of filters on it to give it like an oil painting Norman Rockwell look. And then EB Synth kind of does some kind of tracking. Maybe there's some AI or machine learning thing going on and tracks my thing to the video. It came out okay. It's on my site. There was one version of an earlier motion test where it looked super good. It was like super like an animated oil painting. And they're like, this looks too cartoony. Let's maybe reduce the result like 50%. And then it was like a weird in between where you're like seeing video plus the treatment. So then it felt more like a filter, the final product, but it was still a cool, interesting project. Yeah. Trying to learn new skills for
come
that.
On, Jake, you did too good of a job. You got to cut that out.
Yep.
That's cool. I have heard a lot of cool things about EB Synth.
It's been out for a long time. I think I got it in like 2019 and then still in beta. No one really talks about it much with all these other AI apps coming out. But yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. It feels like a awesome application that's mixing that machine learning with giving the creator still a lot of the ability to control and it be like a really good tool to help us create something that we couldn't do before.
There seems to be a lot of those type of tools, and some of them are controversial because the whole AI thing has always been a controversial topic in motion design these past couple years. But another tool I use is that mask prompter. I've used it on some projects for you guys where it's like a rotoscope kind of tool where you can just kind of lasso around your character and then we'll track it and rotoscope everything out. And that saved me like hours and hours of time.
That's awesome. Not that we need to get into it a ton here, but I tried using that and I was having the hardest time with like its performance. I'm curious if there was any like tips, tricks you have like for using it.
Like you weren't getting good result, or it was just like
super slow or... and just seemed to be really buggy.
So the first time I used it was for one of your projects and it was really fast, which was good. And then there was an update and it made it super slow. And I used it for like another project for you guys and it was super slow. And I'm like, I'm gonna have to use another thing. So I ended up using that Puppet Tool 3 that comes with After Effects. But then I think they updated again and now it's a lot faster. I know there's like two ways of doing it where you can like actually use like a eyedropper and like click on certain parts of a video and that will track. I just use that lasso or the, what you call it, bounding box, just square shape around an object, and then I can just scrub through and just scale my square around as the person moves, and then it usually does a pretty good job. I know you have to like change some of those settings of like how detailed you want that edge to be and how accurate, and depending on what you choose makes it super slow. I usually do like medium settings for everything and it usually does a pretty good
nice.
Job.
I love this. This is definitely going to be like our most technical episode, but I love it. We need more of this.
So yeah, I use that plugin for the pickler, all the rotoscoping for the pickler. Cool. Did a pretty good job.
That's awesome. I'm kind of curious more about like if there is one After Effects technique or tool that you find indispensable in your work.
A lot of my 2D animations, there's a lot of like bouncy things, like a bouncy motion. And when I first started, I would manually have to like animate the curves to get that kind of like a bouncing ball, like finally like settling. But then I found an expression that I've used for like 15 years where it kind of does the math for you to figure out the velocity and the amplitude of the bounce. And so like whenever I need anything bouncy, I'll just use that and you can tweak that expression. And I use that whenever I need to do anything that has that kind of overshoot bouncy look to it. Whenever I do like 3D to bring in 3D assets into After Effects, depending on deadline, I will use Real Smart Motion Blur with After Effects to create fake motion blur on my 3D renders, just to save time of not having to render the actual 3D accurate motion blur in Cinema 4D, just to save me an hour or so. of render time. I use Particular. I've been using that since like 2006. That's like the only trap code one I still use is Particular, just to get, sometimes I need some dust or some snow in the background, or yeah, just basic stuff. I don't try to do anything super fancy with particles or anything. And yeah, but those are pretty much, I don't use a ton of plugins, but those are like probably the two I use a lot.
How did you start? So you're now, we're kind of jumping all over the place, but it's really interesting to hear, you know, we're giving you the, like, giving the listeners the memento treatment, right? Like, we're going to start, like, you know, at one point in your life working on Marvel stuff. And then how did you, what led to that moment of getting that email from Perception?
Yep. So pretty much my entire life, I was always into art and drawing. And like, from as long as I can remember, I was always doodling and drawing and making my own comic books. And then in fifth grade, I did a summer school course for animation. And it was like old school animation, like cell animation. We're using the tracing paper. And then we also did stop motion claymation. And I like made a version of myself in clay and did a little walk cycle and turned it into the Incredible Hulk. Of course, Marvel. And then, so that was like my first taste in animation in fifth grade, just like that weird summer school course. And then in high school, my parents bought me this software called Animation Works for the Mac. It was like a super early version of what kind of looks like what Flash turned into. Kind of like you draw and kind of has keyframes and tweening frames. And so that was my very first like digital computer animation. And that was just for fun, doing little like character fight scenes and stuff. And then that was just like a hobby. And then I went to college at the Rochester Institute of Technology for New Media, which was a little bit of everything. So I did video editing, print design, typography, sound design, a little bit of animation, a lot of graphic design stuff. And then I ended up being exposed to so many things, but I wasn't exactly, there's also a lot of web design. Flash was big at the time, and there wasn't I didn't know exactly what my career was going to be with all these random skills. But, and I thought I was going to be like a web designer or like making Flash banners or animated banner ads or something. I don't know. And then I really liked the animation part and I wanted to get better at the graphic design part. So I ended up staying for a master's degree in computer graphic design. And this was around 2004, 2006. And it was a 2-year program. And somewhere in like the second year of my program is when I heard the word motion graphic design for the first time. And I like started researching that these studios were starting to pop up. And this is like early days. And then I'm like, wait, so you can get a job making animations and you don't have to work at DreamWorks. You don't have to work at Pixar or Disney. You can just like make cool commercials and movie trailers and music videos. I'm like, I kind of want to do this. And I kind of talked with my advisor and like changed my entire curriculum and got as many animation courses as I could. And luckily one of my professors used to work at Nickelodeon. He had some industry experience. He's like, you need a demo reel. And I didn't know what that was. So I had like 6 months before graduation and kind of every project I had, I'm like, this has to be something I can put on my portfolio. So I'd work late nights just to get everything as good as possible. I was able to find a job it was in Rochester, New York, at a local post-production house working on cheesy local car commercials and, you know, yeah, local small commercials. But it was my first experience with client work, and that also helped build my portfolio for those 6 months when I graduated. And I had started up applying to different studios in New York and LA, and ended up getting a job in San Francisco at a TV network called Current TV, and then moved there a couple weeks later. And like, then I was part of a design team, and these guys were so good. Like, in the 2 years that I worked at that company, I think I learned more about design and animation than I did in like 4 years of undergrad and 2 years of grad school. And like, my skills jumped in like those 2 years, just like, because it was a TV network, so it was fast turnaround, fast deadline, so you had to like really be good and no time for mistakes and like be really efficient. And then after those 2 years, I decided to move to Chicago. Didn't have a job lined up, but I emailed a bunch of studios in Chicago, and one studio is like, we can book you for a month. And then by the end of that month, another studio had finally replied to my email. And by that time, I was eventually got like a six studios that I could just like rotate through for the whole year. And then I did that for about a year, and then Harpo Studios contacted me, and they were working on the Oprah Winfrey show, and they booked me for 2 weeks to work on some stuff for the show. And I'm like, this is cool. It's Oprah. She's been on the air for, it's like a big, big show. But I'm like, creatively, it wasn't that challenging, and the look was a little dated compared to my personal style. And so I'm like, I don't know if I'll want to do this long term. And then I was about to leave that, and then they launched the Oprah Winfrey Network, which was a cable channel. And then they hired me full time as an art director. And then I got to work on all those shows from the ground up. And then I had more creative control. So that was much more fulfilling than the actual Oprah show. And so I ended up staying there for almost 6.5 years, working on anything Oprah was involved in. The TV channel, or the, she went on tour, and her book club and her website. And even like, she was a producer on a bunch of movies, and I got to work on like the Harpo Films logo animation before the movie. And so I did that for like 6.5 years, and then they ended up moving everything from Chicago to LA, and I wanted to stay. I had just bought a house in Oak Park, so I wanted to stay here, and then went back to freelancing. And then I had another full-time job in Chicago called Carbon VFX. I was hired as their lead motion designer. And at the time, they were like, you're going to be the lead motion designer, and we're going to also hire like a mid designer and a junior designer below you. And we're also going to hire a senior designer above you, and you'll all be the new motion design team. And so then I'm like, that sounds great. I'll have people to help me, and also someone I can learn from. So then they hired me, and then they didn't hire anyone else. And so I was the sole motion design department at the Chicago office. And that lasted maybe a year and a half, and then decided to go back freelancing. And then I've been freelancing ever since 2017, 2018. And for most of my freelance career, it was on site. I would take the train into downtown and work at various studios. Sometimes the gig was a week, sometimes it was 2 weeks, sometimes it was a month or two, but then every so often I just have to find a new, my commute changed. So it was weird as a freelancer, where you're kind of like, you never have like a permanent office, and you're always bringing your, I bring my mouse with me. I'm a left-handed person, so I bring my mouse that works for me, and you're always on their workstation, so your setups are always different each month. But then once I went fully remote around like right before COVID, I was getting more remote work. So I was starting to build my home office a bit, and I bought a nice computer, turned my guest room into like a home office. And now I've been completely remote. And I would say the past couple of years, most of my clients are outside of Chicago. It's either the West or East Coast now.
Yeah. What's it like being tight with Oprah?
So she saw me on a regular basis for almost 7 years. I don't know if she knew my name, but I knew she knew I was involved with the graphics that were on the set and animations. And then maybe around 6.5 years, I was walking down the hall and she was walking towards me. We locked eyes and she's like, graphics. And she's like, and I'm like, she knows me. That's my name now. Graphics. I should get that tattooed on me. Oprah knows me as Graphics.
That's hello, my name is Graphics.
I think you that was a legally binding statement. So I think your birth certificate has to change now.
Yep. Just working at that Oprah Studios, Harpo, was a cool experience. But like after 6.5 years, just every day being the Oprah look, that Oprah magic look that they want with the sparkles and the gold type, got a little repetitive. So it was nice to go back to freelance after that. And that's probably why I'm freelancing, is I love being able to work on something for a month and then work on a completely different style with a completely different team, different client.
It was the change to going like remote brought about by COVID, or has that been like an industry trend? Because I feel like as long as I've been freelancing, I have like the idea that like freelancing is like job based, where it's like you have this project and we hire you for this project and you do it on your own and then you send us the product. Is that like just kind of different kinds of work, or like what's been your experience with that? Because it sounds like you had a different freelance experience with going into places.
For most of my freelance, from like 2000, when I moved here in 2008 to like 2020, the studios in Chicago didn't want me to work remotely. They wanted me to come on site. They said it's too hard for me to work remotely. They want me to be on the team, be on the calls, be on like the meetings. So like I was never able to work remotely. And then studios I reached out to that weren't in Chicago, they're like, we prefer to work with the animator that's local so he can come in. Sending these files back and forth are too hard. So like no one thought remote was possible for those first like a decade of my career. And then once we had to go remote, we started figuring out solutions and people were like, oh, I guess we could hire a freelancer in a different city and just have him work on a Dropbox or upload his files at the end of the day. And now it's kind of what I do every day now.
Do you see that trend even coming back of like wanting people to get in spaces, or do you think it's kind of like changed for good?
I'm not sure. I've worked since COVID, worked with a couple Chicago studios, and no one's ever asked me to come on site yet. Even though I'm in the same city, they're like, you can work from home, you know. And I don't know of any studio that's fully remote, fully back in the office. They're still hybrid at most. So, and like, I don't know of any studios that have required freelancers to come in, at least in Chicago.
That's really interesting.
The industry is at a really interesting spot right now, I feel like. What advice do you give to motion designers that are looking to break into the industry at this level, maybe even work on Marvel content?
Yeah, the industry is in a weird spot. I know this past year or so, a lot of people who were typically busy said they kind of have been quieter and getting less work, and they've noticed clients have their budgets have kind of shrunk a bit. And so since client budgets have shrunk, studios have less need to hire freelancers, and there's been also layoffs going on, so they have less need to have full-time people. So there's laid off full-time designers and a lot of freelancers all fighting for the small amount of work that's coming in. And each year there's a new batch of college grads of motion graphic designers, and we're all kind of fighting for the work, I guess, to get to like Marvel. I mean, I think I was doing this for almost 20 years before I got to work on Marvel stuff. But, I would say as far as like your portfolio and what you want to focus on, you should work on stuff that you're passionate about and what you want to get hired for. Like when I first started out, it didn't hurt, but I thought I'm going to be a generalist, so I'm going to be good at every style. And that helped me get my first gigs. Like, he can work in, you know, clean vector style. He can also do like a grungy illustrative style. He can do a little bit of 3D, a little bit of 2D. But then over the years, I'm like, there's stuff I don't have any interest in and I'm not passionate about. So I'm not going to put that stuff on my Instagram. I'm not going to put that on my portfolio. I'm just going to focus on stuff I like. And that ended up giving me jobs that were in my style, you know, like one thing for many years, all I would do was like animated type and logo animations. And I always had an interest in doing characters, 2D and 3D, but I didn't really have that skill set. And just for fun, I started playing around with 2D characters in After Effects, like little rubber hose walk cycles, and then started playing rigging Cinema 4D 3D characters. And I was just posting them for fun on my Instagram. And then one of the Chicago studios, Flavor, reached out and they said, we saw your Instagram. We see all these character stuff you're doing. We're in desperate need for a character animator. So you're a character animator. I'm like, yes, I am. And so they ended up hiring me for this McDonald's commercial, which required these Hello Kitty Happy Meal characters to dance, like a dance party. It was all 3D, but tune shaded to look 2D. And I was there for like a month and a half, and I took my personal project skills and like applied it to an actual client project. And I wouldn't have got that job if I wasn't just like doing what I'm passionate about and stuff I'm interested in. So like putting that out in the world, clients are going to see that and they're going to hire you for the stuff they see on your site, on your social media. And that McDonald's job ended up getting me hired for a Chicago Cubs short film, which is like a 2-minute big project where I got to direct a team of animators, and it was a big VFX CG 3D spot. And that all came from just like these silly Instagram character things I was making. So yeah, focus on what you're passionate about. And I find that personal projects are important. Like, I see a lot of people's portfolios where it's just client work and their reels are just client work. And I feel like you could fill some of that space in your demo reel or put some stuff on your social media and portfolio of stuff you're passionate about. And if you're not getting that type of work from clients, you need to make it in your own time. I know we're all busy with full-time work, so like sometimes you gotta work on the weekends if it's a personal project, or some late nights after your client work is done. And I've been doing that my entire career. Just, I think my latest demo reel, which I made a few months ago, is like almost 40% personal projects.
Yeah, it has the infamous Jake dance in it. It's wonderful. That was so funny. That was in there. Like,
yeah, so on my phone, on my notes app, I just have a list called like personal projects. And there's projects I've had there for like 5 years. And it's just like whenever I have an idea, I'll just like add it to the list. And sometimes I'll hear a song. I'm like, oh, I have an idea for an animation for this little song. So like that Blinding Light song by The Weeknd, I'm like, oh, I'm going to have a dancing guy on his couch, you know?
And so, it was very funny to see, yeah, like the Marvel stuff that you're talking about, like these big title animations, and then it just cuts to doing a little shimmy.
Yep.
Very funny. Yep.
But that's the kind of the creativity that's needed. You need to be able to bring like, mm-hmm, something different that stands out. And I think you do a really good job of that. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool to hear the direct correlation, especially as you tell the story of experimenting, learning something new, showcasing that to the world, not creating in private, and yeah, getting that out there, that leading, yep, directly to paid work that, you know, sustains you and your family, but then also allows you to work on something new and fun and creatively stretching. Yep. That is so, so cool. And I'm glad to yep, hear that works and is working for you. I think a lot of times people are scared to do personal projects. They think it could be a waste of time, could be waste of energy, and oh, no one's really going to care about this. But I think it's just that net need to be able to continue to hone your skills and experiment and risk it. And I think a lot of times that can, mm-hmm. that can come with some really cool reward.
Also, like, social media has become a big part of designers' careers. Like, what we show on our social media is almost as important as our actual portfolio site. Like, when I started, there wasn't any Instagram, or Twitter wasn't even a thing. I was like, early YouTube was the only, and Vimeo was the only thing. And like, when I first started, I was posting things that I thought clients wanted to see, which was like, okay, I need to make a product shot because, you know, that's what's going to get me hired. So I have to do a fake beer commercial product shot of cans, and particles are really popular. I got to learn how to do, you know, particular and particle simulations, and oh, I should do more typography stuff. And so I was just doing stuff just because I thought that's what clients wanted to see, and that might help. But even if I got hired for like a particle thing, I wouldn't really enjoy it. So I don't put that kind of stuff out, and I don't do like photorealistic 3D because I'm not interested in that kind of stuff. I'm more interested in stylized, graphic, kind of fun, colorful work. And so I think that I kind of shifted somewhere where I'm like, I'm only going to post stuff I'm passionate about. And I know some people feel like they need to constantly post for the algorithm or their audience. And I'm like, I'd rather post a handful of things a year that I worked hard on and I'm really, you know, proud of, instead of like, I got to make my weekly render or my daily render. I would say quality over quantity. And again, those personal projects, and that started from the very beginning, I was like trying to make everything as something that I could put on my portfolio. So whether it was a class project or a personal project, or just always try to treat it like it was a paid project.
Yeah, that's good. All right, I got some rapid fire questions for you. That's okay with you.
All right.
sure. What, if you had to boil it down to one thing, would you attribute to getting to where you are now and accomplishing the things you have?
There is a part where I noticed even in college, once we were doing animation courses, that I had a good sense of timing. And me and my classmates, we were graphic designers, but some of them were struggling to figure out how to take that graphic design and that composition and make it in motion. And for some reason, I just had that skill set where I kind of knew I had an eye for it. So that kind of helped. As a motion designer, that's a very important thing, to have time, taste and timing. And then I think a reason why I'm getting hired on a consistent basis is I'm pretty laid back and easy to work with, and reliable and professional, and I don't bring any drama. and yeah, over the years I have a pretty broad range of styles, so like I don't have like a small specific style that I need to work in. So like, it helps, especially with studios. They'll bring you in for one project, and then they'll have another project, and I'll stay for another project because I can work in both styles, whether it's like a 3D thing or a 2D thing. And so just having a good skill set, being a good person, not being a jerk, being reliable. And I think I've worked fast now, faster just over the years, just muscle memory.
That was a lot more than one thing.
Yeah, that is.
Oh.
But yeah. All important. All equally important.
Yeah, all key.
If you had infinite budget and could make anything on any subject, what would it be?
I would say, like, since most of my career has been creating stuff for clients, whether it's like selling a product for a commercial, I would want to make more narrative, something like a narrative short film kind of thing, whether it is for a client or it's just my own thing. And then I would probably, if I had infinite budget, I would hire someone that's really good at some specific part of that. So like going back to that Chicago Cubs thing, like I came up with like the overall look and the characters and design, but then we had one person who was really good at lighting in Cinema 4D. So he did all the lighting for the things. And then we had one person who was really good at texturing. So he did all the textures for the characters and the hair and stuff. And like all the, everyone was working on what they were good at, and it came, became a project that was like really good and much better than if I did it by myself. So if I had an infinite budget, it would be like a team of people I could trust and do their thing much better than I could.
That's cool.
But I also would want to work on it. I don't want to be a full hands off. I also want to put my, my sweat into the project too.
So an animated short film. Nice.
Yeah.
Sci-fi.
Probably. It would definitely be a stylized. So not like. Nothing too realistic. More stylized, graphic, probably funny. I like to do like funnier stuff.
Yes.
Goofier. Entertaining things.
Yeah.
Probably something pop culture-y. I like to do a lot of pop culture stuff. Ghostbusters, back to the future.
Okay, well, and lastly, I'm curious for you, when you look ahead to the future, what's kind of like the dream or the vision? Where do you want to end up?
That's a good question. I'm always thinking about where I'm going next. Right now, I'm pretty happy freelancing. Hopefully, in the future, these kind of opportunities such as Marvel continue to come my way. I'd always love to work on more movie stuff and more TV related stuff, since so much of my career has been commercials. So I'd love to do that, maybe more. Even my role at Harpo was an art director, so maybe more art direction instead of just being a motion designer or creative direction. And then one thing I haven't worked on yet is like a music video. I love music videos, and that was a big inspiration when I was in college, just cool motion graphics and music videos, and maybe one day I can work on that, something like that.
Are there any fun like projects that are coming up that you're getting excited about?
The past few weeks or few months, I've been working with a studio that does all the trailers for the Netflix comedy specials. So like I get to work on the graphics for those trailers. So like we just did one for Shane Gillis and Joe Coy. And so like they'll send me like the poster of the comedy special, and then I'll kind of take that kind of look and vibe and create the titles like coming next week or coming in July, and create like a cool motion graphic-y graphics and animations to put into the trailer. Those have been fun, and I've been really liking that, and not too stressful. And then there's a potential project, hasn't been greenlit yet. They do some music video stuff. They're in LA. I just had a meeting with them last week, and so that might be happening. Who knows? So there could be something cool with that in the future.
That would be awesome. You are an incredibly well-connected guy. I'm curious what your like networking tips are for how you get yourself out there, how you make these connections and really stand out.
I would say early on in my career, just working at studios really grew my network, because like all those designers and producers and editors worked at that studio, and then they ended up changing jobs and they would remember me. So then I know like some people I worked with in Chicago moved to LA, and some of those LA studios needed freelancers, and they were my connection to get into those LA studios. And then I feel like I have a very good LinkedIn network, and I'm really particular who I connect with. And whenever I finish a project with a client and I make sure to connect with them on LinkedIn so they remember me. And if they ever look up motion graphic designers on LinkedIn, I'll be one of their first connections. And then this is purely by luck. I don't know if it's still the case, but for most of my career, when you type in motion graphic designer on Google, I'm like the first portfolio that shows up. There's a few like tutorials and stuff, but like the first portfolio is Jake Matthew, motion graphic designer. It was on the first page. Maybe it's been moved down to the second page by now, but I got so many clients through Google just because they typed in motion graphic designer or motion graphic designer Chicago or.
Yeah, it's the first one after the sponsored posts.
So yeah, I use Squarespace. I don't pay for any SEO optimization. It's maybe because the name of my site is Jake Matthew, motion graphic designer, and all caps. And I've had my site since like 2006, so maybe it's one of the first ones that had that term. But yeah. Wow,
that's pretty wild, actually.
Power of search right there.
That's crazy SEO.
And so like a lot of those people that find me on Google are just like random people and they don't have the budget. And sometimes it's like some YouTuber teen. He's like, can you create this logo for my YouTube channel? I'm a video gamer and got $20. I'm like, nope. But like a couple years ago, MTV found me on Google. This was like 2015. They were working on the MTV VMAs. Miley Cyrus was the host. The show was coming out in like 3 weeks. And I guess they needed some promos and maybe they had a company they were working with and it didn't work out. So they were like rushing to get some 15 second spots out. And they just found me on Google. And when they emailed me, I didn't believe it was them. I'm like, this has to be a scam. And I was like looking up the email. It was like something at Viacom.com. And I'm looking up, is this a scam? Are they trying to get my social security number? And it was actually MTV found me on Google and they paid me to work on like 3 15-second Miley Cyrus promos for the music video awards. And they just like sent me like several gigs of green screen footage of her. They had never worked with me and they're like, just make something cool. And like MTV was a big inspiration to me growing up. I loved their logo animations. They're cool. They did 2D and 3D and claymation. And so that was another big moment for me, just getting to work for MTV. And I was super stressed out because I didn't want to screw it up. This is like my first chance and first experience with them. I'm like, so what are the rules? What color palette do you want? What can I have some references? And they're like, do whatever you want. You know, we like your style. We saw your portfolio. Just make it look cool. And like, that was stressful for me. I'm like, I don't know what they think cool is. And so I'm like, I looked on the VMA website and I found the font they used for all their online branding and their color palette. It looks like a black and purple and green and blue. And so I used that as my color palette and I was making the rules up so my stuff would match their website. And so I sent them the first promo and they're like, yeah, this looks cool, but don't feel like you need to match our stuff. Just do whatever you want. And so then the second and third one just got even crazier and crazier. And then the third one ended up with like me having Miley Cyrus ride a cat in outer space and added like electricity. And she's like going through like a laser tunnel and they're like, yeah, this is awesome. Thanks.
You can definitely see the progression if you look on your site of which one came first then.
Yeah.
They get a little one
was like, because like their website was super clean, minimal vector. And so I'm like, I got to do it clean. And then it just got crazier and crazier. And they liked it.
That is wild. That is absolutely wild.
Not only are you the first motion designer on Google, you're the only person who's actually a person. I'm sorry. I'm really amazed by this search engine optimizing.
Yeah, that is amazing.
You're the only single portfolio on the whole page. It's all like, how to be a motion graphic designer. And that's Jake Matt.
Well, I lucked out on that one.
So I first met you at the Mochi design motion design meetup in Chicago.
Yeah, CMAG. Yeah, Chicago Motion Artists Group. And then we call the Slack Mochi Mo Chicago.
Talk about the importance of being involved with something like that.
I think it's super important, especially now that not all of us are working in offices together. We're all kind of doing our own thing. And I've definitely got work. That's how I met you. And probably we wouldn't have worked together if we didn't meet each other at that meetup. And when I was full-time and needed to hire freelancers to come work at our studio, I would meet people at the meetups and get to know them. And when time came to find a freelancer, I'm like, oh yeah, I met that guy last week. He was really cool. He said he does 3D stuff. Let me just double check his website and let's email him. And so it's definitely good for networking, and it's also just good for seeing what everyone else is doing and what kind of projects are out there and how everyone's feeling, and the get a pulse of our industry in Chicago.
Good food, good drink. You know, there's always like time to learn from people that are way cooler, smarter, better, and also just be in a room full of like-minded people where you get to speak the same language and connect with people that are further ahead, that are further behind. And I love the group. I love being a part of it and love getting to go to the events. I think that is just like, so invaluable to getting to learn. Yep.
The next meetup is in 2 weeks, right?
So yeah, normally we do it every 2 months because the alternate months was supposed to be the C4D Chicago meetup. And they would actually meet at a Chicago studio and that studio would give a presentation. But that kind of stopped during COVID. And then after COVID, that Chicago C4D meetup didn't really pick back up because a lot of studios were also in financial issues and there was layoffs, so they didn't really want to have presentations at that time. So we're thinking about expanding our CMAG, Chicago Motion Artists meetups, more. And then also expanding from just meeting at a bar. Maybe we can do presentations. Maybe we can just do some activities. Like this board game night is our first like non-bar activity. And we're talking about like bowling and more of those like wiffle ball or whirly ball kind of events. And maybe laser tag or VR tag or something.
I feel like the motion design community is very unique in that way. I feel like everyone just wants to hang out, and it's very cool and fun.
You want to work with people that you enjoy, with your friends.
Yeah, and it's definitely nice to just nerd out and talk about stuff that you can't really talk to with your clients. They don't really get it. Or like your spouse or your family won't understand, but just fellow-minded creative nerds talking about animation.
And Jake, we definitely enjoy you. We've had an awesome time just getting to know you. You're incredibly talented, and it's been awesome to have you on here and hang out and hear all about your process and the work that you've done. I'm curious how listeners can keep up with you, your work, and all your future endeavors.
Yeah, they can find me at jakematthew.com or just Google motion graphic designer, apparently. And I'm on most social media, but the one I'm most active on is Instagram. I'm Mr. Jake Matthew, all one word. And I spell my last name with only one T, which has haunted me my entire life. But yeah, I'm definitely going to be posting more stuff on there soon.
Awesome. We will definitely be keeping up, and hopefully to have you on another project here soon.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to work with you guys again.
Yeah, it was so awesome getting to hear your process about everything Marvel and even MTV and all that stuff, and just the wild freedom that you don't expect with a lot of these projects.
Yeah.
Thank you a ton for coming on, and we will definitely have to have you on again.
Sounds good. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Jake.
All right.
Bye.
See you later.
Bye.